This is Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland's last year as director for the World Health Organization. She is credited with rehabilitating its reputation after it had been tarnished by charges of corruption and mismanagement. But in the more than 5 years since Brundtland took charge, the burden of disease and health conditions among the world's poor has gotten worse. NPR's Brenda Wilson reports on how she has met these challenges.
The World Health Organization's Director General, Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland, spends about a third of her time away from headquarters in Geneva. She confers with her aide, Jung Leiden, about fitting interviews into a schedule that includes a briefing on raising money to help developing countries prepare for potential bioterrorism attacks, and a panel with other international health experts and economists. She'll cap the day with a reception and a dinner at the downtown Willard Hotel for toute la crowd from Embassy Row and International Health. Brundtland, in a long-sleeved, understated lavender gown, squints at the bright lights beaming down on the receiving line. Her demeanor is strictly no-nonsense. In Europe, this short, blonde woman from Norway is known as the liberals' version of Margaret Thatcher. But here, a distinctly warm side comes out.
I have to give you a kiss.
The next day, it will begin all over again, a schedule Brundtland has kept up for years.
From the time I became environment minister, then prime minister, then leader of the opposition, back to prime minister and then director general, it has been a continuous, you know, intense period of work for 29 years.
Brundtland's years of service in Norway, where she started out as a young Harvard-trained public health doctor, gave her a special vantage point for taking on the World Health Organization, according to Nils Dallaire of the Global Health Council.
Up until Dr. Brundtland, the leaders of the World Health Organization were all traditional doctors. They had come up through public health systems, through their national ministries of health. They were used to talking to other doctors. They were used to talking to international bureaucrats. The fact that Dr. Brundtland came to this as a national political leader, it was a very natural move for her to want to carry her message to national leaders of the major countries of the world.
He says Brundtland was very effective at that, getting countries like the United States to buy into the idea that for poor countries, development, sustainable development, to use a word coined by Brundtland, is linked to health and well-being. The World Health Organization is the largest of the United Nations agencies. It has a budget of about $2.5 billion and more than 3,000 employees, nearly half of whom are health experts. At the drop of a hat, they can be called on to deal with, say, an outbreak of hemorrhagic fever in Central Africa. And once a year, there's a meeting with 192 health ministers from around the world about the effectiveness of WHO's approach.
The World Health Organization has to try to be the center of excellence, to try to be the objective source of the best information and the best practices. And that's what we, what is our mandate and what we try to do to support countries.
In the past, WHO has waged hugely successful campaigns to rid the world of polio and smallpox, and for a while almost, it seemed that it might tame malaria as well. Malaria still is one of the world's three major scourges, along with tuberculosis and HIV and AIDS. Dr. Brundtland explains how its initiative, Roll Back Malaria, illustrates how she and WHO work.
What we are trying to do is to have people who have different things to bring to the table, who have different sources of funding, trying to help them work together instead of doing each their little thing in their separate way.
WHO provides technical assistance and advice to countries around the world, but has no budget for projects. It has to convince country governments, donors from more developed countries, and private foundations to support its recommendations. In the case of malaria, there are more than 300 million cases each year, and more than 1 million people killed by the disease. The most vulnerable are children in Africa, where the overwhelming majority of cases are, and resistance to old-line drugs such as chloroquine is rampant. So WHO recommends a drug called artemisinin, which in combination with DDT and bed nets has resulted in dramatic declines in death rates. But treatment with artemisinin at roughly $2 is 10 times the cost of the older drugs. So Brundtland has been unable to persuade the U.S. to support its use in Africa.
This is voluntary funding, and unless it's coming forward, there is no solution for the poor countries who are dependent on outside support. It is one example that illustrates the point that there can be professional differences of opinion. There can also be funding decisions which are made not in WHO, but they are made in USAID or made in UK. And unless we can convince that they should be giving funding for what we believe is a good technical program, we have no way to force people.
I think her style is to be very low-key, to be very consensus-building.
And these days, Richard Horton, the editor of the British medical journal Lancet, says that won't work.
It's all very well going to meetings of presidents and prime ministers. It's easy to get their consensus when you've been a former prime minister yourself. But what does that actually mean to a family in a village which has no water supply, that's suffering guinea worm infection, that's ravaged by malaria, that has an encroaching HIV/AIDS epidemic, and which has absolutely no access to health services? What vision does she or her team or a future head of WHO really have for that family? And that is what has been failing.
Horton remembers what he calls the golden age of WHO, when legions of public health workers were drawn to it because of its vision and its mission.
That was in the late 1970s and early 1980s, when it actually took on a very activist political character, when it really did advocate hard for the poor through its Health for All initiative. And as time went on, I think people did start to get anxious that it was becoming over-politicized, and so shrank away from that role.
Instead, Horton says, WHO bought into the idea of relying on the private sector to provide health care, an approach that is not designed to address the needs of the poor, who have few advocates in the global market.
We have drugs that can treat HIV/AIDS. We have drugs that can treat malaria. Only 1% of people in Africa who need antiretroviral drugs presently get them. How can we allow that situation to happen? We do so because we are not caring enough. So we need to mobilize a constituency to do something about it, and WHO needs to take the lead there.
With more than 25 million people infected with HIV in sub-Saharan Africa, a little over 100,000 are being treated with anti-AIDS drugs. Even after WHO made a deal with pharmaceutical companies to accelerate access to treatment and prices dropped by as much as 90%. Brundtland's critics say it's because WHO has not brought enough pressure to bear on developed countries, is too cozy with the pharmaceutical industry. Brundtland agrees that these efforts, as well as a new initiative called the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, TB, and Malaria, won't be enough if developed countries don't do more. But their failure, she says, is not her fault.
I don't think they feel that I have been too nice. I mean, I have been a much stronger political advocate for health than those who went before me. It's not the higher you shout, the more effective you are. The question is, are you able to move forward the forces that decide what happens? For instance, have you been able to be part of the reason why we have a global fund now? And I think I am part of that reason, because I managed to bring health onto the political agenda and have a Secretary General of the United Nations who, much more than any time before, has taken AIDS health issues as part of his central agenda.
A new Director General of the WHO will be elected later this month, but Brundtland will stay on in the interim to help him or her make the transition. She never thought of running for a second term.
I would be 69 after 5 more years. And I frankly think being 69 is too high an age to keep the level of energy and intensity.
There are children and grandchildren and a house in southern France that awaits.
To have some time for reflection, and so it will be a very different life.
Dr. Gro Harlem Brundtland, the Director General of the World Health Organization. I'm Brenda Wilson, NPR News, Washington.